Welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts.
Chin Lin.
I was giving you a chance to say your name first.
But it's always, we're your hosts, Chin Lin and Isaac. So
I was going to change things up and let you say your name first.
Yeah.
Isaac.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
Okay. I am not prepared. I don't have an outline. So this is completely freestyle.
You're completely freestyle.
Well, I dance freestyle, which means I don't have a style.
Okay.
Okay, so we're back to talk about Harley Quinn, the animated DC Universe series that is available on HBO Max. And we're going to talk about seasons 1 and 2. So if you haven't watched it, this is your warning.
Yeah, there's going to be spoilers, like all the spoilers for seasons 1 and 2. All of them. Okay.
Also, in case you forgot, Harley Quinn is a very adult show, so in case you've got kids in the background. Okay, there's a lot to talk about. Where do we start?
I don't know.
You recommended this show to me, so... Yeah, I'm letting you take the reins.
Well, because it was a good show. I was
it
like,
is a good show.
This
I
show
liked
is
it.
Good, and it took you forever to watch it, but...
Not forever.
I watched it as it was coming out, I think, 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I started after episode 2 released because there was something on Reddit that used one of the scenes from episode 2, and I was like, man, that's hilarious, what's this from? And then I learned that the show existed, and it was on, like, DC had its own TV streaming service at the time, and that's what it was on. I was like, oh, okay, well... I'll figure out how to watch it.
I really enjoyed the character of Harley Quinn. I didn't grow up reading comics, so I knew who Harley Quinn was. Obviously, I knew who Joker was. I knew about Batman. Batman is one of my favorites.
Well, Harley Quinn is a fairly new addition. Like,
when you say fairly new, you need to date yourself because might have some listeners who are younger than me.
Well, yeah, that's true. But like, so Batman's been around since like the 1930s or 40s, right? But Harley Quinn was introduced as a character to the animated Batman series in the early 1990s. So,
which is the era in which I was born.
Yeah, but. You know, so comparatively to, like, the Joker and the Riddler and all these other Batman characters, she's a fairly new addition. So she hasn't been around forever. I think the probably a case of the most successful...
female anti-hero villain characters?
Not where I was going. I was going to say one of the most successful... transitions of a character that's introduced in a TV series from comic book material then returning into the comic book material.
Oh, I see. It's flipped.
Right.
She didn't start out as a comic book character is what you're saying?
Correct. She got her start on the Batman the Animated Series in the early 90s and then was adopted into comic books. And I think the same thing happened for Jubilee from the X-Men.
Okay.
So she's, you know, far less popular than Harley Quinn.
Okay. We may or may not have covered this in the preview episode. We're kind of doing things a little out of order. So apologies, listeners, if you're hearing repeat information. But Harley Quinn was never appealing to me as a character prior to this watching this series. But of course, I had to give it a chance and... pretty much every show that Isaac has gotten me hooked on have been excellent shows. So I liked how we were seeing Harley. Everything in the Gotham universe, Gotham City, all these superheroes and supervillains, we're seeing the society from her point of view. So clearly, we need to address all of the sexism
Right. And
and.
I like, in the first episode, they start to address all of this sort of almost immediately, right? Like in the first episode, Harley Quinn is she's, very predictably abandoned by Joker and then sent to Arkham, and then she continues with her psychosis of, and this is, sort of a classic expression of people's behavior in an abusive relationship, right? The other people will say, this person is no good for you, you should leave them. Whether they're being emotionally manipulative or physically abusive, the victim is very typically going, no, you don't know them like I do.
They're defensive of the abuser.
Yeah. And this, Harley Quinn in episode one fits this to a T, and even though there's plenty of evidence to display that Joker like really does not care about her in any meaningful way. He sees her as a tool to be manipulated, but that's it. It's not until Ivy sets up this situation where she forces Batman to choose between,
Oh, no,
sorry, she forces the Joker to choose between
her and
Batman
Batman.
and Harley Quinn. And when the Joker chooses Batman, as he would, that finally lets Harley Quinn sort of understand, like, oh, I see. He really doesn't care about me. But so I think this is a good way for the writers to get Harley Quinn out of that psychosis and explain like what's finally set her off to go on her own. Unfortunately, I don't think it's a good like treatment for people in general. I don't think that you can set up these sorts of scenarios for every person that's in an abusive relationship
Oh no,
to get them to see the light, right?
this is a TV show.
Yeah.
Like that part's just not going to be realistic. But yeah, I it's really nice to see a female character, whether she identifies as good or bad, try to make it on her own.
Yeah.
It definitely has themes of female empowerment. Which I definitely enjoy watching. One of my favorite episodes, this is the first episode I watched twice. Not because Isaac told me to, but because I genuinely liked the storyline of the episode and what it meant for Harley's character development. It's like episode five, I think,
Okay.
of season one, where her and her crew, they have to go into her head.
Oh, yeah.
And like, it's this museum of Harley Quinn memories from childhood to adult to her transformation to Harley Quinn. And there's this danger room. Not danger room. There's this room that's clearly off limits.
Right.
And it's her most traumatic memory. And that's where, she thought Joker pushed her, but in reality, she jumped.
Yeah, in reality, she had been sort of
She was manipulated to choose to jump.
right, but in the end, it was still her decision. And when she realized that, she then creates her own sort of origin story about who Harley Quinn is and how Harley Quinn was created. And sort of in her mind, right, Joker being in Joker character objects, like, hey, you can't do that. That's not how reality works. And she's like, well, it's my memory. I can change it how I want, and creates her own. And, that's actually, very true. Like, there have been studies done on memories, and the more often you remember something, the more likely it is that you alter the memory from its original state. so that it is more likely that you introduce some falsehoods to it the more often you recollect a particular memory.
So when a crime happens, it's imperative to get witness statements right away before the witness recalls the memory too often, and then it gets kind of muddled.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Gotcha.
They'll want you to be remembering it for the first time because that's going to be sort of the freshest, most clear memory you're going to have. But if you run over it in your head, or if someone else talks you through it several times before the police do, it's very likely that you'll introduce something that was not true. And in fact, even your first recollection can be wrong if it's been suggested to you. There's an experiment that a professor did to his college class where he would have a teaching assistant run in and do something crazy, right? And then run out. And then the professor would suggest to them, hey, did anyone see that brown-haired person, when the person is actually blonde or have black hair or something? Did anyone see that crazy brown-haired person? And then a lot of the class would be like, yeah, that was definitely a brown-haired person, even though it certainly wasn't. Like, video evidence would show you that it's not.
Interesting.
But okay. The people would actually recollect that, yeah, of course. He said it was brown hair, and it was definitely brown hair.
That was one of my favorite episodes of season one. And another reason why I liked it was because of the high stakes. So, and also Psycho was actually useful in this episode. And he was actually...
I think Dr. Psycho is probably my favorite character in the show.
Even though he's a total, like, masochist.
He's not a you mean misogynist.
Misogynist, yeah. I'm sorry.
Almost because of that. Like, it's so...
It's so caricature.
Yeah, well, it's not even necessarily caricature. Like, it is he is a little over the top, but not that much. Like, he doesn't think that he has a problem with women or anything. He thinks he's a normal person. But then he can't help from using the C word, which is great. I think it was in episode 3 or 4 where Harley Quinn is like, you know, the Joker has Batman and Superman has Lex Luthor and Dr. Psycho has his own inability to not say the C word. And he's like, that's not my problem. I just hate Wonder Woman. That's stupid. Oh, I see. You have a point.
And you also like that Tony Hale voices him.
Yeah. I think that's it. I mean, I definitely like his voice, and I don't know, his character just...
He's this short, mean guy.
Yeah. He's got really good quips. He makes logical sense all the time. Like the episode that we just rewatched, right, where the crew has been captured by the Joker, and the Joker wants her to put on her old Harley Quinn outfit and as a sort of way to humiliate her, right? And King Shark and Clayface are like, no, don't do it, Harley. And Dr. Psycho being like, yeah, this is how I'm going to get out of here. Yeah, do it. Do it. It's just, he's always doing that kind of stuff. Like, and I think I like him because he's always egging Harley on to be more evil. I find that to be funny. Where he's always like, no, just do it. Or, yeah, let's just murder them all. That's a great idea.
And as we saw in season 2, his personality being that way leads to more conflict.
Yeah.
Because Clayface is just this happy actor, thespian guy.
Before you get to King Shark, that's a different take on Clayface than other incarnations of Clayface. So the reason that Clayface is a Superman villain in the not Superman, sorry, Batman villain in so the Batman sort of the Batman universe is that he had something done to him where his body turned into clay, but mm-hmm. he was already an actor, and he's very bitter about the people that are responsible for turning him into Clayface, essentially. So he's sort of hellbent on it, on destroying their lives. And then, you know, just because he can, he's like, well, I can also then, you know, rob banks and things. Whereas in Harley Quinn here, he's just like, we don't have any backstory as to why he's Clayface. He just is a, like,
he's a sidekick.
Yeah.
He's a crew member.
He's just a clay-y, you know, entity, and you're not sure why. And he's certainly comic relief with his very hammy acting style.
Mm-hmm. And Alan Tudyk, he does a really good job having that over-the-top voice for Clayface.
I did not even know that was him.
Yeah. He does both Clayface and Joker.
Yeah, I actually heard that in episode one when we saw that again last night, I think.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was like, he sounds like Clayface for a second, and then he sort of adopts the Joker voice. And in episode one, Clayface hadn't been introduced yet, so I don't think he was reserving that register for anyone. So that's why he kind of sounded a little like what Clayface sounds like afterwards. You know, you don't hear them sounding similar. But yeah, that makes sense that he's voicing both of them.
So back to before our tangent, I was going to say that Dr. Psycho's personality later gives opportunity for more conflict that is within the crew, right?
Right.
And we see this evident in season two because he kind of becomes more of a bad guy for sure in season two. So he's still your favorite even though he went against Harley in season two?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, because he's never told them... he's never like been like, oh, I don't want to be super evil, or I don't want to rule the world. He's never said that to them. So he hasn't been tricking them. He was very upfront. Like, yeah, I guess like when he joined Harley's crew, he's like, now he very sarcastically said, I'm not doing this just to help my image with women. I'm doing it for other reasons, which clearly he's not. He was just trying to rehab his image. But once the image no longer matters, right, he's like, why do I need to stick around with Harley Quinn and her crew? I can do this on my own. I've got powers, right? Like, he's very rational about this kind of stuff. And I guess that's probably why I like him, is he's a very consistent character. Like, there's I feel like... his portrayal and characterization is very consistent, and that's what I like about him. And he's so funny sometimes.
He is very funny.
that's really what gets me. I'm like, man, he's funny. Now, obviously, if I knew Dr. Psycho in real life, I would not like him. He's not a good person.
Mm-hmm.
But as a character for this show, yeah, he's easily my favorite.
All right. Do you want to talk about some of the other crew members?
So...
Want to transition to King Shark? Yeah, I'm going to save Poison Ivy for last.
Yeah, so King Shark, you know, he's introduced as a...
He's also comic relief.
Yes.
Just in a different manner.
And before this show, I did not know King Shark existed. I don't know that he ever showed up in Batman the Animated Series... which is where I'm most familiar with Batman. And in any of the famous Batman stories, like The Dark Knight or The Killing Joke, like though he doesn't show up in those. So I didn't know he was a character. So, you know, as of the recording of this episode, the new Suicide Squad movie is out.
The Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
Not... Versus just Suicide Squad.
Yeah. This one is apparently better and actually a decent movie and not a bad movie.
And directed by?
James Gunn, who directed Guardians of the Galaxy and Guardians of the Galaxy 2. With King Shark, right? He's in the movie played by Sylvester Stallone and is more of like a dumb, sort of comic relief character. Like, and when I saw the trailer and him acting like that, I was like, oh, I guess the King Shark that I'm familiar with, which is the one from this show from Harley Quinn, is not the one that's, you know, the normal way he's portrayed. Maybe it is. I don't know. But there's two different ways. So with King Shark in this show, he's definitely comic relief. And
he's very supportive.
Yeah. And part of the reason I think for that is this. They wanted to lean on this sort of stereotypical, like, a shark being really evil and mean. And he is just, you know, super friendly and nice. And the only reason he ever kills anyone, sort of if he has to, but he's also like so happy-go-lucky about it. Like, there's that one episode where they were, I forget what the heist was, but King Shark was supposed to go in and like hack into something. Oh, I think they were stealing the weather machine. Or it was slightly before they stole the weather machine. They had to steal the watch that made you invincible so that you could then take all the laser beams that were protecting the weather machine. King Shark is like, oh, finally, they're using me for my skills. And he walks into the computer room and just immediately bites the head off the guy, the tech guy that's there, or the security guard that's there, and then starts, you know, typing away at the computer. He's like a gentle giant, but not. And that's part of his charm. I definitely like him.
I liked how we had that one-off episode in season two where we learn about his background and that he's a prince of the Ocean Kingdom or something.
We already knew that specifically.
You knew that. I didn't know that.
From season one, he does say,
Wait, he did? I must have missed it.
Yeah, because it's a simple, like, one-off line, like, yeah, I'm royalty in the Ocean of the Deep or something, but I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, and it's like, I that's see. It. Okay, I completely missed it's that. Like,
no, I don't want to talk about it.
But it was a refresher for anyone who remembered that one-off line. And I liked how his betrothed, Tabitha, like, didn't want anything to do with him. And she was this chain-smoking...
Hammerhead shark.
And, like, she came off as one of, like, those older ladies who just have those horsey voices from smoking all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. She just... That was the type that she gave off.
Yeah.
And the thing I did not like about King Shark was... And, like, this is, like, it's not any of his fault because it's just shark nature. We have a minor flashback where we find out he ate his younger brother because his younger brother had bled.
Oh, yeah.
He got a cut or something. Yeah. And then King Shark got a whiff of it and just went crazy.
Yep. As apparently he does, which they set up in episode three, which of season one, which I think is probably my favorite.
Episode three?
Yeah, because it's...
That's the one where she gets the crew.
Yeah, and that's where King Shark is introduced, but it's also where Robin tries to pretend that...
Robin.
Harley decided to be his nemesis, and so it's also... It's got Batman and Superman in it. Superman just shows up to rescue Lois Lane and is like... It's a nice take on Superman where he's just like, oh yeah, I don't even consider you a threat. I'm not even going to bother with this. I'm just going to, you know, move on, because You know, canon-wise for Superman in the comics, he is essentially a god with his powers.
Because he's from another planet, right?
Yeah, and, well, the writers just keep giving him, like, making him more and more ridiculously powerful. And so it's insane the amount of power he has.
Like Omni-Man.
Yeah.
From Invincible.
Yeah, it's even worse, because Omni-Man can actually be hurt. Superman, like, in the absence of kryptonite, is essentially an immortal god that cannot be touched. It's ridiculous.
And that's why he's called Superman.
Yeah. So it would make sense that he would look at Harley Quinn and be like, you're not anywhere close to my radar.
Like, you're not even worth my time.
Yeah. Like, this is nothing. Somebody else can take care of you. Yeah. So I liked that. I liked that. I really liked that they had everyone in the Justice League watching the fight between Batman, Joker, Poison Ivy, and Harley Quinn on Tawny. Like, they were all, like, Aquaman was sitting on the toilet watching it, and Wonder Woman was sitting on the couch eating cereal watching it. I thought that was all really good.
Mm-hmm.
What I also liked was some of the stuff that they do in the show. Would be considered sort of Justice League level stuff. Especially when they go and get the Parademon army from Darkseid. And it's good that in sort of at the end of season one, that they had taken care of that, right? They had the Justice League get swallowed into the Book of Fables. And it's like, okay, well then now anything that the Justice League would normally have showed up to take care of, they can't. They're gone.
Oh, you just reminded me. Wanda Sykes as Queen of Fables. Classic.
That's very good. Very good casting.
Very good casting. Oh my god. Queen of Fables is badass.
Yeah. She's like,
I want her powers.
I felt that you know, whenever she showed up and whenever Poison Ivy was like, what are you doing? Don't work with her. She's actually evil. Now every time, like, well, after that, every time she showed up on screen, I was like, oh god, things can go horribly wrong right now.
Mm-hmm.
Harley Quinn does not realize how powerful and evil, like, just evil this woman is.
Queen of Fables is an opportunist, and she'll only look out for herself. And I'm glad that she's, even though she's not like a huge role in season one, like, she's a pretty decent role, and she is an antagonist with Harley Quinn. But when we first get introduced to her, she's not an antagonist at first, because Poison Ivy is trying to tell Harley, hey, like, there have been other female villains trying to make it on their own. But there's this glass ceiling.
Yeah.
And you should hear her story before you do anything else.
Right. Because she is essentially harmless when she's introduced, right? She's stuck in
the tax code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once she's released from the tax code, I got the same feeling like every time she was on screen. Like the same feeling I had whenever Homelander was on screen in season two of The Boys.
Oh, like you had this feeling of dread in your stomach.
Yeah, like,
because you know shit's going to go down. You're just waiting for it to happen.
I was like, I know it can go down. Like, she could just pull out whatever and it can all go south really, really quickly. Yeah, I was genuinely afraid for the characters when Queen of Fables was around.
All right. We'll save Poison Ivy for last, but let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the Legion of Doom guys. So Two-Face, the first time I was exposed to Harvey Dent / Two-Face, mm-hmm, was in The Dark Knight.
Okay.
That's like my favorite DC movie of all time. And mm-hmm, I know, caveat, I haven't seen that many DC movies.
Well,
but
I think you still picked the best one.
The Dark Knight was my favorite movie. I went to see it in theaters like the weekend it opened. I was late for one showing, But luckily, I was able to go to another showing. I just had to, you know, like, wait a while. And I got into the theater too late. So I was literally front row watching The Dark Knight with my neck up like this. And I was just like, I don't care how much this hurts. This is such a good movie. I was like, oh, shit, that happened. Oh, my God. Oh, fuck, it's not over yet. That was me in 2008 watching The Dark Knight. But I digress. So Harvey Dent / Two-Face, that was my first exposure of him. So, well, obviously it makes sense for him to be in Harley Quinn, the animated series. But, he wasn't like super, he was kind of just in the background. So well, I didn't have a lot of opinion about his character. I also liked Bane. The guy who voices Bane is clearly doing a parody of Tom Hardy's voice.
Right.
And I like how the guy who voices Scarecrow, that actor, his name is blanking, but he was in the CW show called iZombie. And he played a medical examiner in iZombie. I like him. I like his accent. I thought he was very fitting and witty. Oh,
I don't like his accent.
The British accent?
Yeah.
You don't like...
Is
Scarecrow not supposed to have a British accent?
No, not necessarily. I don't know why he would. But it's not that it's a British accent. It's that particular accent. So at least in the episode that we just recently watched, which is the one where...
Joker
kills him, right? He's got this accent where he will replace TH sounds with F sounds. So he'd be like, oh, I think it's this way. And
Oh, that's like one of your biggest pet peeves.
Yeah, I absolutely hate that accent.
It's so weird that this is a really...
Yeah, it makes me think that you are stupid as fuck.
That is such a mean pet peeve.
Yeah, but that's like whenever I hear that accent, that's immediately where my brain goes. I'm like, you are so dumb.
Well, it's not the accent. It's just the way he pronounced the word.
Yeah, but yeah, so that accent, I've heard it also more recently.
But anyways, we're going on a tangent here. So I like the Legion of Doom guys. Obviously this is Harley Quinn's story. This is her show. So we're not going to learn that much about the Legion of Doom guys. I like that Bane is consistently there. And,
in season one, right? He's consistently in the Legion of Doom. He's always in the offices and
there in season two.
Yeah. He gets a sort of a much bigger role going on in season two, except I don't think he's on screen as much, but, he, you know, gets his own slice of Gotham when he, the Riddler and Two-Face sort of split up Gotham into their own, sectors. But when they're in the Legion of Doom, it's interesting that he's treated so poorly by all the other Legion of Doom members. Like, they all are like, they just constantly shit on him and treat him like he's
a human being with feelings. He's just all, whatchamacallit, hulked up.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure whether that's just supposed to be a dig at his character, because I think when Bane was introduced, like, he was sort of just this mindless villain for Batman to fight that was too strong for Batman and broke Batman's back, ooh, right? I think that was sort of his introduction, and it wasn't until later that it changed into, like, him, you know, having actual thoughts and things, sort of like Doomsday and Superman. Like, the death of Superman was kind of a shitty story because it wasn't like anyone outsmarting Superman or anything like that. It was literally like they introduced a villain that had never been in the comics before that was just super strong and just literally beat the shit out of Superman. I think that was Bane's introduction, and maybe that's what they were making fun of here. But, you know, I'm not a very good comic book nerd, so I could definitely be wrong here.
You've also had more exposure to DC in general than I have.
Yeah.
Consumption, not exposure. You've had more DC consumption than I have.
Oh, sure. Like, I did read some comic books back in sixth grade. Like, I read the Zero Hour story. Mm-hmm, I don't remember it very well. I actually had to go back and have, like, Movie Bob summarize it. I was like, oh, right, that's what happened. Okay, I kind of remember that.
We can segue to Joker really quick. He's a shit face.
See, what I don't get, right, and this comes up in episode one.
He loves them theatrics.
He does, but what I really don't get is why he would ever have any goons, right? Because the likelihood of you dying from the Joker just deciding to be random is so astronomically high from this version of the Joker that it makes no sense that any of his goons would be like, yeah, I'm gonna stick with the Joker. Because, and here's a prime example, right, where when Harley Quinn shows up to first break up with him, he's like, what, no, I'm an agent of chaos, that's what I do. And then he like kills one of his goons with a pool stick, and I'm like, okay, right, like,
that guy didn't do anything.
Right, if you're just standing anywhere near the Joker and he can just kill you, and that seems like it would happen fairly often, like, why would you ever work for him? There are tons of other supervillains in Gotham that you can go work for that will not just kill you at the drop of a hat. Though, I will say that it does seem to be sort of expected that you will die at the drop of a hat, because when Harley Quinn is trying to form the crew, and she goes to a seedy bar and she's like, why don't you guys work for me? And you don't have to just, I won't willingly throw your lives away intentionally. There's a guy over in the corner just sending his henchmen into a portal to die for apparently no reason. And so it's like, well, okay, well then maybe goons are really just that dumb. And that's why there are people willing to work with the Joker, because I guess they have the mentality like, oh, I won't be the one that gets just shot randomly.
I have an answer to your question, but I don't think you'll like it.
Okay, go on.
Goons are willing to sign up to be a henchman for the Joker because easy marketing, branding. Joker's got a great brand as a supervillain.
Yeah, but I mean, does that?
I mean, he's at the top,
are
right?
Are you willing to die for that brand, though?
I don't know, but he's at the top, right? I mean, it's like a student fresh out of college wanting to work for a big corporation.
Of course, you know, I'm also discounting the idea that these guys could just be chemically controlled, too. It could be that, so like in the first Batman movie, the Joker has this gas that he uses that like sort of turn people into his goons, or at least put a big smile on their face. So, and that is kind of his shtick, is to use chemical warfare as a way of getting people to either laugh or follow his orders or whatever. So they might not be willing necessarily. So that's it. Okay.
Well, I still like my answer.
I don't think anyone's doing it for brand. Yeah, you're right. I don't like that answer. I don't think anyone's going. I mean, because yes, you're right. He is like the number one villain in Gotham. But
like, if you want to build a resume of being really good henchman, and you make it,
what's the point of the resume if you're dead? Like,
I don't know. I didn't say you'd like the answer. I was offering one.
The chances of you dying are just so high. Just go hench for Two-Face. Like, you're much less likely to die.
What kind of villain would you be?
What kind of villain would I be?
What kind of powers would you have?
No, see, that's the thing. Like, so there are video games out there where you get to choose the good path or the evil path, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like, I can never bring myself to like be the evil path. Like, I am always too empathetic for the non-player characters. Like, in my mind, like, when I'm playing the game, they're real, so I don't want to torture them. I don't want to make their lives miserable. I want people to look up to me, so I can never choose the evil path. Like, I might start a playthrough and go, I'm going to be evil this time, and that lasts for, like, all of 10 minutes. Like, I just can't stomach being the evil person. So I would not be a very good villain at all, ever.
You're no fun. All right. What I wanted to say about Joker was that, we thought he was dead after season one because the lair... Well, we thought he could have been dead because a bunch of rocks...
Yeah, but at the end of season one, like, you see his hand come out and he is laughing and then it, you know, flops.
I said he could be dead. You could still die from having rocks crumble onto
you. Absolutely, you can. 100%.
You're starting another tangent here.
Okay.
So we thought he was dead for a while, and it turns out, obviously, he wasn't. And he just lost his memories and becomes this whole different person. And obviously, you're not supposed to like the Joker in season one. He's clearly the bad guy. He's an abuser. He's maniacal. But in season two, like, you see a whole other person, and he doesn't have that makeup, the clown makeup anymore. And it's kind of like the writers gave him, I mean, it's not a complete redemption story because, you know, he's still the Joker and he does get those memories back when Harley.
But it does actually allow them to use the Joker outside of, you know, what they've established him as in season one is this, you know, very insane sort of agent of chaos supervillain, right? That
he has the capability to care for someone.
Yeah, and he has he can have other motivations. So, you know, in episode one, season one, they've given him this, like, what is now today the stereotypical reading of the Joker, where he's very smart, he sets up very intricate plans, but he also does things that are sort of ridiculous and very chaotic, and he just wants people to laugh, and he's very sensitive about that, and he loves Batman, right? But that can only go so far. That he's essentially, like, he's a one-dimensional character at that point. Like, he that's it. So by giving him this second life and then having him like that second life and then remembering his past as the Joker, those two separate psyches have to merge, and now he can have different motivations and he can be more of a gray character instead of just a completely, like, evil, dark character. Now he can, you know, he will care for his girlfriend's children because he did before and he still has those feelings, which is sort of a way of saying the way to cure narcissism is to completely erase a person's memory and, you know, let them live a happy life, and then you can try and reintegrate that and they'll be less narcissistic. Not a practical solution, but I think one that might work.
So what I'm hearing from you is that we've got these characters who have some sort of mental illnesses, whether these characters are good or bad, and they just, the solutions for which we kind of saw them in the show to solve their...
Oh, yeah, to solve those things? Yeah, they're not practical in real life.
They're not practical in real life, so, you know.
It's unfortunate, because it'd be great to solve these things.
Did you have anything else you want to say about Joker?
No.
Okay.
We should probably get on to the main characters.
Well, we already talked about Harley.
Oh, okay, good.
You want to talk about Ivy now?
Yes.
Okay. So, I finished season two fairly recently, and I don't have any problem with Harley and Poison Ivy getting together. The only thing that threw me off was that I just didn't see it coming. When they had that first kiss, And then, you know, when they sleep together. But I don't have a problem with that. What I just, it just came, it was just a surprise for me because I totally missed. Isaac claims that they have been playing it up since season one, and I went back to rewatch season one. I didn't finish the entire season again, but I watched at least half. And, like, there's, like, very, very, very minor hints, but I still argue that these hints of, you know, Ivy tells Harley, you know I love you, right? Like clearly she's communicating it in a very platonic manner, and, you know, she starts to date Kite Man at that point. So, like, are you suggesting that these hints that we saw in season one that are supposed to lead up to their inevitable romance, mm-hmm. are you saying, like, in some subconscious level, like, Poison Ivy, like, romantically loves her best friend?
Yeah, because I think that she got together with Kite Man as a way to sort of get over Harley Quinn.
So,
like, I think
so she didn't actually love Kite Man?
No, I don't think so. Well, I mean, yes, she did, but in more of like a guilty way, like she felt like, oh, you know, I've gone so far with this guy and like, I do like spending time with him. It's not like she doesn't like the guy, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that the reason that she got together with him was sort of in an effort to, sort of get Harley Quinn out of her system because, you know, in episode one, she frees Harley Quinn for, you know, nothing, essentially, right? Just that.
You mean from Arkham?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, has her move in with her. Like, it's a thing where it's like, okay, this could be platonic, like the way that you took it, or it could be something more. And so they've dropped that hint right there in episode one for you. And then as it goes on, there's a few times where, like, they share a face-to-face glance where it looks like they might kiss and then something else happens.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't look like they're going to kiss. I think you're just reading it that way because, like you said last night, maybe it's just because I read it that way because I'm a guy.
Well, I mean, yeah, but...
And you just like lesbian love.
Look, that's not the point. Yes, it's true, but that's not the point. The point is that I think that the writers are, one, probably men, and... Two, know that this show is going to have an audience of mostly men, because that's just who's into comic books. And I think they're hoping to get more women to watch this show, which I think they should because it's an excellent show. But I think that, because I watched this as it was coming out, you know, and I would definitely see things about it on Reddit, like, everyone was like in season one, they're like, yeah, they're setting it up so that Harley Quinn and Ivy get together.
Is that, I know you say you didn't read all of the storylines, all of the comics, but is that based on the comic storyline?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think so. I think that's new to this incarnation of the Batman universe.
I mean, you could also be wrong. There could be a comic and maybe you just didn't read it.
There could be. I mean, if there is one, I definitely didn't read it, and that's very easy to do because I haven't read, like, 99% of Batman comics. So.
And that's what I'm saying. Like,
but I don't think it
like
is.
Some of the characters, like you said, like, they're pulled from the comics, and, like, it was just a surprise to me, and obviously I didn't read the comics. You didn't read all of the comics, but...
I didn't read most of the comics, but, yeah.
I'm just saying maybe it was... Maybe they threw the storyline in also as a callback to source material.
It could be, but I doubt it. I think this was because of the way it was being discussed. I don't think that anyone had done it before. That was sort of the new twist on for this show was that Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy would be getting together. It was. I don't know how this coincided with She-Ra. But I think they were at the time thinking that they might be first to have like an animated, lesbian couple.
damn, I covered She-Ra last year. I can't remember the dates, but She-Ra was also very recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, sorry, we got hung up on Poison Ivy and Harley
Quinn. And then he had me rewatch season one, which actually I was wanting to rewatch some episodes of season one anyway, because I needed to remember how things started, because I took a short break between season one and two. I forgot why, but I took a short break. Probably for recording reasons. I didn't want to binge both seasons too quickly and then be like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we had a minor disagreement about the top couple of Harley Quinn currently. Let's see, what else?
But so let's just go back to Poison Ivy in general, right? Because we stuck a lot on the relationship, but that's not all Poison Ivy is, right? She's not just a romantic symbol for the show.
She identifies as an eco-terrorist.
Yeah, she says that a lot in season one. I love it.
I like that she, what's the word? She's very supportive and, I guess, confident in herself. Like, clearly she doesn't need
someone to... Well, now she is. Yeah, and I think, so part of that, and maybe that's part of the reason why you thought their romance was more of a surprise, was that, Poison Ivy explains, like, why she likes Harley Quinn so much, is that because... As a psychiatrist, she actually helped.
Mm-hmm.
She actually helped Ivy, like, be okay with people
mm-hmm.
and not just wanting to murder them all.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say about Poison Ivy is, you know, as a character in the show, like, she seems...
Independent.
Overpowered.
Oh, okay. I was thinking about, like, personality characteristics. You were thinking about powers.
Yeah, like...
Oh, she's got dope powers.
She seems to always be able to go in and save the day, with the exception of the time where she gets kidnapped by, what's his name? Scarecrow. But, yeah, it seems like her powers... don't really have a limit, and
well, it's because we're on Earth. There's always plant life.
Yeah,
like they like the other prison that Bane held in season two. Like they had to be out in the desert.
Yeah, to keep plants away from her.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It was strange. Oh, but that. Because I was wondering if they've done that so that she's just a tool that, like, anytime they've written themselves into a corner, they're like, oh, we can have Poison Ivy take care of it.
Plot armor.
Yeah.
Like, her powers are plot armor something?
Could be. There was this one time where... it was your favorite episode, in fact, where they're inside Harley Quinn's mind... And I think it was Dr. Psycho. It was like, I could really use a Deus Ex Machina right now. And then somebody shows up out of nowhere to save them. And Clayface is like, I don't know. It's either Clayface or King Shark. But one of them was like, I don't know about that Machina you were talking about. But there was at least this guy that showed up out of nowhere for no reason to come help us. So that was good. Which is, you know, the literal description of a Deus Ex Machina. I thought that was great. That was awesome. Okay. Sorry. What else did you want to say about Poison Ivy?
You brought up that episode. I thought it had to do with Poison Ivy. And then you didn't say anything else about Poison Ivy.
Oh, no. It had to do with the sort of same plot armor idea. Like,
I see.
Being a Deus Ex Machina. Like, oh, well, Poison Ivy can just show up and take care of it. So it's fine. Don't worry about it.
She has really good powers. Like, I've always known who Poison Ivy was in the DC universe. I just, like I said, I just never really thought about consuming that entertainment. So, but yeah, I like how she's got that She's got those foliage pants, and she's always wearing that black leather top. I'm assuming it's leather if this was live action, but I have one nitpicky thing I want to mention, and it's only because we just rewatched this before recording. It's the second to last episode of season one where fucking Joker, you know, kills her.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then, you know, she's wearing a white top.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then they...
Because they didn't want to show her bare breasts, but she should have been stark naked. I get why they didn't want to, but yeah.
They bury her, you know, and it's evident she's got the white top. And then, you know, in the next episode, she, the power of nature revives her along with Harley's tears. And she comes back with the same top, but it's black. And I was just like, wait, she was wearing a white top. Like, she was buried, obviously, so she was covered in dirt. Like, realistically, that top should have been, like...
Dirty brown?
Dirty brown. Like, dirt brown.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, she looks sexy in black, but I'm just saying, the color of her top did not make sense at the time.
I mean, there's really no reason for her to be in a top. Like, she grew to, like, bigger than,
She became a giant.
Bigger than Dr. Psycho's wife. And then he was into it. I'll give you $30 to put me in your pocket right now.
Y'all know I have a type.
That was so good. I love Dr. Psycho.
I've completely forgot he had a wife. Mm. And it was Giganta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's also got a son who was the reason that... they had to go back and find his wife. Well, because he released a review about Harley Quinn's crew that made it seem like Ivy and Dr. Psycho were dating, and both Ivy and Dr. Psycho wanted to set the record straight, and they figured out that it was his son that was making the recordings. I was just recently also rewatching season one, so that's why I remember this stuff.
I really did enjoy season two, though. I like both seasons. I can't pick one over the other. I like them for different reasons. I really enjoyed season two because of just the chaos that happened after the falling of Gotham City. So, like, you've got all these supervillains, and they've got their own territory, their own sector.
Yeah.
And wait, Riddler was the one who had the university, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I liked that episode because we got to meet Jim Gordon's daughter.
Mm-hmm. AKA Batgirl.
Okay. So I didn't know his daughter was Batgirl. For some reason, in my mind, before watching this show, I always associated his wife as being Batgirl.
That's strange.
I don't know. I thought the name Barbara was associated with a woman who happened to be his wife who would turn up to be Batgirl. I don't know why. Maybe I got confused when I watched something in the past, but I didn't know it would be his daughter, not the wife.
Yeah, I don't know how recently that became to be true, but I know I've seen like several other things where... Batgirl is his daughter. But I also know that in the mid-90s movie, Batman and Robin, which is not very good, I don't think she was Jim Gordon's daughter. But...
Oh, daughter. Yeah, okay. DC database. Okay. I don't know. I got something confused in my mind. But, one more thing about Batgirl. The person who voices Batgirl sounded so much like Harley Quinn.
Right.
And we were like, wait, does Kaylee Cuoco voice two characters now? And then we looked it up and it was like, oh, it's her sister.
It's her sister, it turns out. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, that explains why they sound so similar. Yeah.
I was like, why? Why did they get Harley Quinn and Batgirl to sound the same? That's weird.
Oh, and one more thing. Sorry, we're almost out of time. But even though I like Harley Quinn, the show, and Harley Quinn, the character in this show, I cannot stand Kaley Cuoco's voice. She yells too much.
I think that's Harley Quinn's character, though. Like,
I don't know. I just don't like her voice. I like her in Big Bang Theory. I just don't like her voicing.
I think she's supposed to be yelling most of those lines. That's just like her over-the-top personality is to her manic. Like if she had mania, right, that would be how she's expressing her mania is through the sort of constant yelling. And you know it's serious when she is talking in a softer register.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that is it for our discussion of Harley Quinn seasons 1 and 2. Shout out to all the voice actors. Like there were so many like well-known voice actors in the show. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can cover them on the spoiler-free episode, which we will record after this one this time.
Yeah, we kind of did things out of order this time. But, just switch it up a little bit. All right, until next time, folks. Bye!
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at bingeablespod, or you can email us at bingeablespod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.